Welcome to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about what it takes to become a millionaire. And if you're listening to this right now, and maybe you guys are saddled with debt, or you're not making as much money as you want, you might think it's impossible and out of your reach. And this is what I've discovered over the years. If you are working a day job, or you're spending all the money that you earn, you'll never ever become a millionaire. But if you come up with a good plan, whether that be content or selling products online, you can do it within the next 5 years or so. But it all just depends on the path that you choose. What are your thoughts, Tony?
That's bold. 5 years. So I think it's funny that you threw 5 years out, because we did a podcast a long time ago where you talked about you got to give something 5 years to make a decision about it. And I was like, that's way too long, 5 years. And now you're like, you can be a millionaire in 5 years. And I'm like, in 5 years, that's too short. It's all about perspective, right?
Really? I think you can do a lot in 5 years. I mean, I've interviewed enough people on my podcast now that have done it in like a year.
I totally agree with you. I think one thing I want to clarify in this is we use the term millionaire or make $1 million. It's really about financial freedom, right? It's not about a dollar amount. It's about how much money do you need in your life to where you can make decisions that aren't totally impacted by finances. So do you want to move? Do you want to travel? Do you want to do something different with your kids? Do you want to put them in a different school? Like, to me, it's about like that financial freedom than necessarily a dollar amount. Because for some people, like their lifestyle, $1 million wouldn't be enough, which to me, maybe you need to change your lifestyle if that's the case. But
yeah,
I do think it's more about creating a life of freedom. And so whatever that dollar amount is for you is sort of what we're going to talk about today.
But millionaire just sounds like a nice round number. That
it does. It does. It's like, who doesn't want to be a millionaire, right? I mean, come on.
Exactly. With the way the inflation's going, though, a million might not be a lot of money.
Right.
Soon.
But that's like $5.
Yeah. Okay. So first off, would you agree with me that it's really hard to become a millionaire or achieve that financial freedom just working a regular job?
Okay. So do you remember the book?
But you've never worked a regular job.
I have never worked a regular job. Yeah. So I can't speak to that. But did you read the book? I'm sure you did, because it's like a big personal finance book. Did you read The Millionaire Next Door?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I see your face. You don't like that book?
I did not like that book.
Why?
Because it sounded like a miserable existence.
Driving the same Buick for 30 years?
Well, I mean, that's actually how I work. Like, because I don't value cars, but
right.
So I drive my car. Like, my last car I drove for 17 years.
Right. Yeah, mine I drove for 14.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I actually liked the book because I do think it's possible to work a 9-to-5 job and become a millionaire, but you have to be exceptionally disciplined, especially if your 9-to-5 job is in the middle class pay range. I also think the counterpoint of that is it doesn't come with the freedom, right? Because you're always chained to somebody else if you're not the boss. You're always having to work around someone else's schedule. You're having to request your time off. You're having to, you know, play by the company rules, which that has benefits, right? Like, you worked a corporate job for 17 years and there were a lot of benefits. You liked working with the people. The insurance benefits are amazing usually at those types of jobs compared to going on your own. There's some sort of security in that sometimes for people, just knowing that the paycheck's coming every 2 weeks. Because usually in a lot of jobs, it's hard to get fired. So in most, like, from what I've seen, I don't have any experience, but from people that I know that have worked in, like, I've worked with companies as consultants, and I've wondered why people haven't gotten fired. So I feel like it's kind of hard to get fired from some of those jobs. So I think there's some benefit in doing that. And I think you can, but it takes a ton of discipline and takes a ton of, like, people have to live off like a third of their income to do that.
Right. I mean, in my eyes, that's like a prison.
Yeah,
I mean, you should be able to spend money on the stuff that you want to spend on. I mean, everyone's cheap about certain things.
Right.
What are you cheap about? I just have to be cheap about
all the things.
That's not true. I'm probably going to go to Indian Wells with Mike.
What's Indian Wells?
It's a tennis tournament.
I was like, sounds like a casino.
No, it's a tennis tournament. Well, actually, I was just talking with Mike about that last night. But the tickets are going to be pretty pricey, like on par with like an NBA game.
Okay.
NBA Finals game. Okay. Probably a little more than NBA Finals game. Anyways, I splurge on things that I want to splurge. I kind of believe in Ramit's philosophy, if anyone follows Ramit Sethi here. You know, you're stingy about the stuff that you're stingy on, and then you splurge on the things that you enjoy. It just seemed like that Millionaire Next Door book was just focused. And I agree with a lot of the concepts in that book, right? I think everyone
should. Yeah, I think so. Let's take that aside. Let's take that out. So I think it is possible to become a millionaire working a 9-to-5 job for your whole life, but it's going to take a lot of sacrifice. And it's going to take you a really long time. So you talk about 5 years, it's going to take you 25 years of being frugal and making sacrifices. And then at that point, are you going to look back on your life and say, oh, I missed out on a lot of things and opportunities because I was focused on getting to this goal and now I'm 55 and a lot of those opportunities have passed me up? Not that you can't do things at 55, because you absolutely can, but your kids are probably grown.
Let's stop talking about millionaire. I mean, this is more about freedom then.
Right, exactly.
Right. I don't consider millionaire next door like freedom.
No, it's not. Okay, so if you don't want to work your 9-to-5 for the rest of your life and you want some freedom,
I think you gotta start something on your own. Actually, we were just having this conversation just before we hit record. My dad was the type of guy where, you know, he believed in just working really hard at the job, mm-hmm. and then people will recognize you and shower you with raises and bonuses and that sort of thing. I don't think it just works that way at all.
No.
If you want something, you have to actually go out and do it yourself, because no one cares about you more than you.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You care more about yourself than anybody else, especially in your workplace.
Right. But the thing I do want to say is that, and I've come across this a lot just from running my other podcast, interviewing really successful entrepreneurs. I get these emails saying, oh my God, I want to be just like this person. I want to be just like this person. But what they don't realize, like kind of behind the scenes, and I talk about this with my guests, is that going out on your own is always a slog. I mean, that's the word I like to use. It's not, it never happens overnight. It's usually the result of groundwork laid out over many, many years. I use 5 years because I think that's a good round. Like if you can hit 5 years, you're probably doing all right.
Yeah. Well, I think too. So I think we talked about like the whole like just save a lot of money and spend less. I think even if you want to go out on your own and you want that freedom, it takes a little bit of sacrifice and frugality, because a lot of the ways that you're able to take those risks and go out on your own and maybe have a little bit of capital to do that or have enough put away to take the risk is that you're frugal on things so that you have extra money. So I know you talked about when was the Hot Pocket phase of your life?
I was working.
Yeah. But you were eating the free company Hot Pockets.
I was. Yes.
Because was that when you were starting Bumblebee?
No, it had nothing to do with
that. No,
that was before I met Jen. Oh. I think. Yeah. That was before I met my wife, and I was just trying to save money overall.
Yeah. But the fact that you were doing that allowed you to do things later down the road and put you in a better position. So I think at some point when you talk to people that have built businesses or gone out on their own, there is a little bit of an aspect of like, hey, for like 6 months, I lived in an apartment with 8 other people or, you know, there's definitely that part of it that I don't want to gloss over, because I think in some ways you need to be able to. Very few people are like, oh, I just have all this cash laying around and I want to start my own thing and let's get going.
I will say this. I would say a lot of people that I've interviewed who are successful, most of them aren't like down to their last dollar and they're not like really big risk takers. They're actually pretty conservative and they choose something that they can maintain for a long time. So you're right. They have like an income or a nest egg squirreled away, I should say, to give them the necessary.
Well, and it's hard if you don't have something put aside, because it does affect your decision making. We talk to people like this all the time that, you know, they need to do a couple things to take their business to the next level. But if they're that strapped for cash, then it affects their decision making. Right. So maybe they run ads, but they run ads with a crappy creative. Right. Because they can't afford to pay a graphic designer or to pay for better photos, or they don't want to pay for ads because ads are expensive. And so there, you know, it's sort of this catch 22 where you do have to be scrappy initially to be able to take your business from like step one to step two to step three. And then while you're doing that as well, you're usually rolling in the profits from your business into building your business. I mean, I know for like when we started the jewelry business, we each put in $1,500, which is nothing, right? Like with $3,000 to start a business is dirt cheap. I mean, you can't really do. There's very few things you can do for $3,000 to start a business.
Well, how much did we spend to launch our course?
Well, yes. I'm saying outside of
$0.
Outside of content sites. But to do physical products, I feel like $3,000 is exceptionally reasonable. Yes. But for the first, you know, 5 months, we took every penny that we made and got more inventory, paid for ads, you know, paid for some tools that would help us. So I think, you know, having some money aside to live on or having a job while you're starting out is always like pretty important.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Totally. I mean, when we first started, like both my wife and I, we were both working full time and just doing everything on the side. Like we could have run that. And I think our overhead was like $30 a month.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing to think about when people say, oh, I want to do this like this person. Most of the time when you're starting out, you are still working another job. And this is a side thing that you're doing at night or on the weekends. And you're not spending time with your friends. You're making different choices with your time and your life. And so you have to be, if you want to get to this freedom point, you have to sacrifice initially.
Yep. You also have to sacrifice during.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the other thing I've noticed also is that a lot of the wealthy people that I've talked to on the podcast, they have multiple streams of income. Like they don't depend on any one thing. They have like a whole bunch of things going on that kind of all contribute to the pot. I mean, that's not always the case, but almost, I would say almost everyone I talk to have like money coming in from, I would say over 5 income streams.
Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be a lot of money, but they all kind of contribute to this big pot.
Yeah.
That they have.
All right. So you want to start talking about different ways to do it?
Ways to do it?
Yeah.
Shall we talk about just the day
job? I mean, the first one is clearly playing the lottery. I mean, option one.
You know what's funny is my wife plays the lottery and I always get on her case. She'll buy lottery tickets like when the jackpot's huge and then she'll like pontificate about all the cool things that we could buy and do, you know, with all that money. I'm like, well, what do you want to do now? Like, we don't need to win the lottery. What do you want? She's like, well, I want a private jet. I'm like, okay, fine. Well, no, we can't do that.
Yeah. Throwing down the private jet. I always say if I won the lottery, which I've never bought a lottery ticket in my entire life, so the chances of me winning are zero, I would hire a chef.
You don't need to win the lottery to do that. Like, Jen, yeah.
I've seen what your chef, what the chef that regular people can afford. And if I remember correctly, you were sneaking out of the house for tacos. So.
Okay, fine.
Well, no, like, I want, like, a salad bar in my house, you know, like. I want the Ruby Tuesdays.
I mean, all that stuff is actually within reach. I mean, the stuff that isn't within reach are like flying private everywhere, which would be really nice. But
yeah, I don't need to fly private.
And big property. Like, you already have a huge house, actually.
Yeah.
So,
okay. You don't need a big house, though. Go on.
I just wanted to talk about like just jobs first, since we talked about your day job in the beginning. Like, I would say, you know, a way to make significant money with your job is to join like a startup company that gives you equity. Yeah. That way you have some sort of ownership. But outside of that, I think it's very difficult to make significant money. I guess unless you're a doctor, but even the doctors that I know, they like work super hard, odd hours. They're on call and that sort of thing. So
plus it's a very stressful job.
Yeah, it is. Plus everyone's, you know, not feeling well, so they're not in their best spirits.
Plus you have to deal with sick people all day long. Exactly. That's the worst.
What are some non-business ways? You can buy stocks. I mean, that's been doing really well for like the past 10 years. I mean, you put in a small amount of money. I mean, these are all things that you can do right now.
Yeah, with a day job.
Yeah, just invest some of your money.
Real estate.
Real estate, right? You can invest in real estate, stocks.
Our friend Brandon is killing it.
Yeah, he's killing it.
I'm about to unfollow him.
Oh, why? Oh, because he keeps
he's just making money. He's like you're talking about multiple streams. He's got like a waterfall of cash just hitting him in the face.
He was always doing well and really kind of shy about it.
Yeah.
And it's just recently, I think, that, all his money has been tied up in real estate.
Yeah. But it also shows you, like, one of the things I like about Brandon, if you guys don't follow Brandon Turner, I think he's Beardy Brandon on Instagram. He does a lot of informational stuff there. You can just follow him there. But, you know, when he got started with real estate, he wasn't paying cash for things. He was leveraging. So, and I don't know how people have different opinions on that, but you can get into that without a ton of cash right away. And then it's just you play the long game.
Yep.
You play the 5-year game, which Steve likes.
I actually recently started investing in like companies, which is a lot riskier.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just have to see where that goes.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is, we didn't record this podcast to talk about investments. So let's talk about the businesses that you can run.
All right.
Okay. Let's say you have no money.
Okay.
What would you start?
YouTube channel.
Interesting. Okay.
What would you start?
What would I start? Okay. Wait, with no money, right?
Yeah. I mean, you have $100, whatever. You're skipping Starbucks.
Did we record an episode on this yet? Because I remember my method was to just do like freelancing or something.
Eventually. Yeah, we did a How to Make $1,000 Fast, I think, was the article.
I think I would be a freelancer to start, to just make some money, and then turn the material from that freelancing into some sort of content or course.
See, I think I would start with, I don't think everybody knows how to be a freelancer. Like, it's a little bit harder to, you have to, like, get in, you have to find customers, right? So I think on YouTube, the reason why I would probably go with that is everyone has some area of expertise that they can talk about, make videos about, show people, tutorials, teaching, whatever. And YouTube is still, I mean, it's very popular, but it's not super saturated yet. So I would just start making video content and then try to work in ads and sponsorships that way.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on what your time frame is, right, for the money. Yeah. Like that's why I asked you, like, we have zero money.
Yeah.
Then I would go the freelancing route. And I know for me, like, I could do that really easily in engineering because I have all those contacts I made from my day job.
Right.
So if you have, like, those sort of contacts, you can easily find some work. But yeah, YouTube probably is the best one because Google just has this way of proliferating your videos.
Yeah.
For you. Like, I think podcasts would be probably the lowest on my list.
It's just harder to get discovered on a podcast.
Right.
It's harder if you don't have a built-in audience.
And blogging would probably be up there also.
Yeah.
It would just depend on the topic, I guess.
Yeah. I just think I would start with YouTube because of the popularity.
Or would you start with TikTok?
I'd probably start with TikTok, actually.
Yeah. Your nephew, he's making significant money, right?
Yes. Yeah. Doing motorcycle edits.
And how long did that take for him to just get discovered? It was like almost overnight, wasn't it?
So he'd been doing, this is really popular with people, is they play video games on Twitch. So he's like streaming. So he had been doing that and then doing edits of video games on his TikTok channel. And then one day he did a motorcycle video for fun and it blew up. And so he was like, oh, okay, people like my motorcycle edits, because he's a good video editor. Like, that's what he likes to do. And he's an artist. He's very creative. So once that first video blew up, it's that whole strategy of like, okay, TikTok likes this, people like this, it's giving me views and followers. And so he kept making those motorcycle edits. And, you know, he's got multiple videos in the millions of views. He's making money through, you know, the creator fund on TikTok. He's gotten some sponsorships already. He's gotten a lot of free product. I think he got like $1,000 motorcycle helmet, you know, from a brand. And when you're 19, I mean, you're making money. I mean, his day job is Hobby Lobby. Right. So he's working at Hobby Lobby, probably making $10 an hour. But then, you know, he's getting a free $1,000 motorcycle helmet that would have taken him 2 weeks of solid 40-hour, you know, 3 weeks. I don't know. A lot of weeks of work to buy a motorcycle helmet, plus the creator fund cash.
Can we talk about the socials, actually? So I would probably, the problem is, I think TikTok's a little harder to monetize right now. I mean, obviously your nephew did it because he got discovered. But like, I mean, I could tell you what I made in my creator fund. I don't think I've hit $50 yet. In my TikTok account.
Really?
I mean, I don't think so. I haven't checked. I obviously don't check, but...
it's not significant money that you're looking.
It's not significant. And obviously my channel is nothing even close to your nephew's, but you know, it's got 50,000 subs in there.
Yeah.
Whereas 50,000 subs on YouTube is paying my bills.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is probably why YouTube would be my first choice. I mean, although I like the short medium of TikTok. Like, it's much, to me, it's like, if you're trying to get started, do you want to make 1 minute videos or 10 minute videos? Probably 1 minute videos.
Right. It's so much faster to make a 1 minute video than like a full YouTube thing. I mean, yeah, but it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, a lot of the YouTubers that I follow, they just kind of pick up their phone and just start recording.
Yeah. Well, I think too, there's so much opportunity on both of those platforms because but most people think about TikTok, they're like, oh, it's like 19-year-olds dancing and lip syncing. And there is a lot of that on the platform for sure. But like my nephew, he's doing really sick motorcycle edits, right? You're giving business advice. There's a ton of like cooking and like diet fitness type content on TikTok. Like the content just runs the gamut of everything from funny to entertainment to serious content. Like, I follow a lot of therapists on TikTok. I follow some attorneys. We both follow all the doctors, right? We're following like the dentist and the plastic surgeon. And so I just think there's no type of content that's probably not going to work there if you deliver it in the right way. So, you know, like with anything, you've got to spend a little time on the platform and figure out how to deliver your content in a way that people are going to appreciate and follow you for. But I think that it's just wide open as far as topics go.
Yeah, and then more and more people, like if you guys listening to this think that it's a lot of work, I mean, it is a lot of work, but what a lot of content creators that I've been chatting with, what they do is they repurpose all their content. So they start out with what they're good at, whether that be a blog or a YouTube channel or even a podcast, and then they take that piece of content and then they just start publishing it all the different mediums.
Yeah.
So for example, what I do now is I'll write a blog post. Like the blog is the foundation of me, of my entire, you know, content properties. I turn that into a YouTube video. Sometimes I turn that into a podcast, but then I do make all my TikToks, YouTube shorts and all that stuff based on that.
Well, and I think if this is something you're thinking about doing to try to build that financial freedom, you know, you're doing this on top of your day job or whatever you're doing for income. And so when you start making money, you're going to bank that money, put it away or reinvest it in the business that you're building till you get to the point where you can either quit your day job and do that full time, or you've built up enough wealth to where you can do whatever you want to do.
Yep. Yeah. And it's going to take some time. Like I always say, like, what do I say? At least two years.
Yeah.
I like the 5-year number because I'm trying to think about this. Like everyone who I started with blogging with a long time ago, like anyone who lasted 5 years is doing really well today.
Yeah. I was going to say, not everybody you started with is still going, but everyone that's lasted five years. Yes. Yeah. Yes, yeah. For sure. Okay. Let's talk e-commerce.
Okay.
Because I feel like that's, I think you have to have a little more to invest, but you probably can make money quicker.
And that's not always the case. So, I mean, you could go print on demand and start for free, right? There's shopping carts like Shift4Shop that are 100% free now. You can go on WooCommerce for $3.
Yeah.
And if you're creative and you have these funny designs, you could launch your store for $3 and start selling stuff.
I mean, how do I do that, Steve? Is there a course that I can...
It's a free workshop.
It's actually a free workshop that I can join. Is there a Facebook group too?
You know what's funny is like I don't actually like that business model for like long term.
Yeah.
Because the margins are so low. But
yeah,
everyone's always asking for like a low risk way of getting started selling physical products. And
yeah.
And that was the best one that I could come up with.
Do you think for that business model to print on demand? Because I see the appeal of it. And I know like when Amazon merch first came out a couple years ago, people just jumped on that, right? It was basically print on demand with Amazon. Do you think it takes, like, how much talent do you have to have to be successful at that? Because part of me feels like, yeah, like, but I feel like if you're not creative, because I've seen some pretty crappy print on demand stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not creative, you can just get someone on Upwork. I mean, it doesn't even have to be graphics. It can just be like slogans or funny sayings that are not trademarked.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is like whenever I give that workshop, I'm always conflicted because here's my philosophy on business and life to a certain extent is that if you pick something that's easy to do, then almost everyone can do that also because it's easy. But if you choose something hard, it's going to be harder for you initially. But once you start being successful, it's really hard to copy you. So I would almost always rather go the harder route.
Yeah. I think about Liz Mercer, who started Sleek Form, the office furniture, which is to sell on Amazon, which is kind of a pain in the butt because it's big products, it's expensive, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to get over here. But I think that's one of the reasons why she's been successful is because she did go into a niche that's a little tougher initially. So there's just less competition in the type of stuff that she's doing.
Yep. I mean, that's the main reason that we do embroidery for our store. I mean, each one of these machines is like $12,000 and it's actually a pain in the butt to learn how to, it's not like an engraving machine, like thread breaks, a whole bunch of things happen. It's a major pain.
Yeah.
But I'm thanking ourselves now that we went that route because it's hard to copy, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people aren't willing to go through that hell.
Yeah. Or they're not willing to invest back in their business, right? To buy a $12,000 machine, let alone a couple $12,000 machines.
But back to print on demand, I mean, if you're a creative person, I mean, you're the engine. You can churn out all these designs. And in a way, that's a pretty good barrier entry right there. Like Amanda Wittenborn,
yes,
who is a Seller Summit attendee and a student in my class, she kills it because she is a very creative person.
Mm-hmm.
And she does stuff print on demand, but her popular stuff, she just prints and she keeps all the profit for that.
Yeah. Okay, so what if you are not creative?
you're not creative,
you don't have any slogans that you want to sell on a t-shirt,
if you're not creative and you're low on funds, you can always just sell other people's products wholesale. I mean, that's like the traditional way to do it.
So are you talking about like going and buying products and then just reselling them?
Yep.
Not buying them at the store, not arbitrage, but
correct. Not buying them at the store, but like, let's say you find something interesting and you just contact the distributor and say, hey, I would love to sell your products or carry your products.
Mm-hmm.
And you create, you know, content or a customer base around that and you sell it.
And what do you need to do that? You need a website?
You need a website, or you can sell on Amazon, I guess.
Do you need, I'm familiar with Amazon. I'm not familiar. Like if you're selling, I don't know, a vendor's products on Amazon, how does that work? Do you need permission from the vendor to put it on Amazon? I'm assuming they're on Amazon too.
I don't think you need permission unless it's one of those gated brands.
Yeah.
But you can just start selling on their listing, right? So okay. If I have, well, Nike's a bad example.
I know. I was gonna. That's who I was thinking of too.
I'm trying to think of a brand that.
Let's say Rubbermaid. Rubbermaid's on
Rubbermaid.
Amazon.
Yes. Yeah. Let's say you want to sell Tupperware. Mm-hmm. Like you could just list on that same.
Yeah. Okay. What else you got? So starting wholesale, or then we have the most expensive option, which is
private label. I mean, private label is the way to go.
Yeah.
Because you're establishing a brand, no one can copy you. If you want to sell on Amazon, you have the margins to do so. It's going to cost a lot more money. And
yeah,
the minimum investment I would say is like two to three grand. Actually, I've seen students do it for less, but those are kind of anomalies, I would say.
Yeah. It probably depends a lot on what you're selling too.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think for your jewelry, they're small and light. You could start for much less probably, right?
Yeah.
Like you probably didn't even invest the full $3,000.
No, not initially. But, you know, we wanted to have money. We had to open a bank account. They expect you to put money in when you open a bank account, apparently. But I still think that $3,000 is, I mean, how much does it cost to open like a restaurant franchise, like a Subway?
I don't know about a restaurant, but we were actually looking to opening a Kumon's. Do you guys have a Kumon's in Florida?
What's a Kumon? A tutoring?
Yeah, tutoring. To open a Kumon, what's so funny about that? We're going to open that, and then we're going to send our kids there all day.
Were you going to be the tutor? You were like, I'm going to start tutoring children. Okay. It's like a mathnasium or something, right?
It is. That's correct. Although, I, for some reason, I just don't like the name mathnasium.
I know you don't. And I try to text you a photo of that place every time I drive by it.
But yeah, I think that was going to cost us like $300,000.
What?
Yes.
That's a lot of money.
Anyway, actually, here in California. Okay.
So. Okay. Yeah. So it's probably like $7 here in Florida. But that actually gives me a sidebar thought on that. So you were thinking about starting a Kumon franchise, but another way to make money is kind of in that free. That's similar to the freelancing, except for you're just trading time. This is not a long-term solution because it's time for dollars, but you could just start your own tutoring business, right? Or your own cleaning service or your own yard service or anything like that.
I mean, everything starts out trading time for dollars, right?
Right, yeah.
So, like, this tutoring thing, like, I would maybe start out tutoring, and then I would probably develop a curriculum, which I would put online, where other Asian parents could tutor their kids.
Right, well, then you build out a whole... It's kind of like I have a friend that started a cleaning business many years ago. And at first, it was her, and she, like, texted all her friends and was like, hey, I need money, and... You know, can I clean your house? And everyone knew her as like someone who was like always like her house was always perfect. So you're like, yes, you can clean my house, right? Because your house is amazing. Well, then over time, she's not the cleaner anymore, right? She's managing a team of people that clean. And so she's, you know, she's not working 40 hours a week cleaning houses anymore. She has a business where she can take off and do things. And she has a team of people that are doing the work. So you could do that with tutoring, right? Where you train up all your students to become tutors.
Here's a perfect example. I don't think anyone knows this, but I've been taking private tennis lessons.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening is like he asked me what I did for a living. And I was like, oh, I put out content. And he's like, really? And then at the time, there were all these wildfires and everything going on. So he actually couldn't teach for a while, right? Because the air was just so bad out here. And so he was not making any money. And so we struck this agreement where I would help him like build a tennis coaching business online in return for free lessons for my son and I. And I remember the look on his face. Like he already had like a YouTube channel but he'd kind of given up on it, or he stopped posting for some reason. So we revived that, and then we released a product. This is literally just months ago.
Yeah,
where he was going on this road trip. One of his students, one of his best students, I'm not his best student, by the way. Who wants to go pro, he turned that into like a paid series of training. And he ended up making, I can't remember, it's either $2,500 or $3,000. I can't remember. But anyway, he made that all online, all digital, and he was just shocked. And if you think about it, how many lessons is that? How many physical lessons is that?
Yeah. Meanwhile, plus wear and tear on your body and all that crap being outside.
Yeah. I mean, when he hits with me, it's a lot of wear and tear in his body because I run him around. But, you know, he teaches little kids too.
That's got to be a ton of running around with little kids. They're hitting the ball everywhere. But I think people don't think about this enough. Most people have a skill that they're something that they're really good at. And that's a skill that you can scale and teach people online. And like, I'm just thinking about my cleaner friend. Like, you could create a course teaching people how to set up a cleaning service, right? You could, like your tennis guy, he set up a course on, you know, online tennis. Basically anything that you can do. I mean, realistically, you and I could create a course on how to run an event, right?
Well, you could create that course.
Well, I would create the course, yes. And you would just be there for the looks, I guess. But no, but like, I'm perfectly qualified. I mean, I've run events since 2009, right? Like, I'm perfectly capable.
That's a long time.
Okay. I know, but like, so I feel like I'm an expert in running events. I know how to negotiate, find deals, how to make an event profitable. You actually could help because you know how to sell tickets. You know how to get sponsorships. We know how to craft things in a creative way. We do things pretty differently than a lot of mainstream events. So it would be possible for us to create a course. We should create a course on how to, but like we could totally do that and just have that running, right? And have side income coming in. You could probably, I think actually one of the things that you were really good at and that you've helped people on is back when you worked your engineer job, you kind of moved into a role of like a people manager, right? Where you,
yes.
And you did a lot of like hiring, firing. So,
well, I did a lot of hiring.
Hiring, not firing. Sorry, that's HR's job. But you were like intimately involved with that process in the company, right? So you could theoretically create a course on how to ask for a raise, right? You could create a little mini course on how to ask for a raise, charge $27 for it, whatever. Like everybody has these skills that you probably don't think about that you're good at that you could absolutely teach somebody else how to do and take it online so where you can scale it so you're not like in person having people show up at a Panera, you know.
Yeah.
You're actually, so I think if you sit down and think about like, hey, what is something that I've been doing a long time or I'm really good at or I'm familiar with? So I have a running group that I run with, right? And a couple of people in the running group are Ironman finishers, which is a really, really big deal, right? Like that's it, but they don't look like they're not like super fit people. I mean, they're clearly fit. They finished an Ironman, but they're not like, you don't look at them and be like, oh, that's a Lance Armstrong for you. Right. If they had a course on like how to do an Ironman, I would buy it if I wanted to do an Ironman because they're finishers. Right. So they have the qualification.
Right.
So there's like, everybody has something that they can do that they can put online and scale and make money from. Like your friend that taught the art classes during the pandemic.
Oh yes. That is an amazing story. You should listen to that episode. I mean, he's an artist. And what he decided to do is he decided to teach art to kids. And during the pandemic, no kids were going to school. They were sitting at home all day. So he cashed in, turned that into a 7-figure business.
Yeah. I think there's a general perception that like, well, everybody knows how to do this or nobody would want to know how to do this. Those are the two biggest objections that I hear all the time. Like, well, nobody wants to know this. Well, no, people do want to know it. And people are out there Googling and people will pay. Or it's already all over the internet. Sure. But to be honest, I don't want to spend 5 hours trying to find reputable sources. Like I need to get my passport changed, right? And I want to, it takes a million years right now. So I'm like, I'm going to use one of those services to rush the passport. But then I spent like an hour last night, like trying to read reviews, whatever. Like, is this a legit service? Whatever. Like, people don't want to spend that time doing those sorts of things. Like I was going to ask you after we stopped recording today, like, hey, do you know a service? Because I don't know which one I can trust. But like, if you become someone that's like a trusted professional in that space, people will pay you to teach them as opposed to spending hours and hours and hours Googling, because most people would pay for convenience over time. And the people that, and most of you guys, because you're interested in living this life, are people that would do time over convenience. So you don't relate to all the people that are going to be your customers. And that's the problem.
Yep. You know what? You just convinced me to start that microprocessor design course that I've been thinking.
Yes, those 200 people are going to be great customers for you. Great customers for you.
I mean, the other thing I want to say is, like, whatever you're doing now, like whatever you're doing even at your day job, I would just start documenting it.
Yeah.
Anything cool that you've been doing at work or wherever, just document how you did it and just put it out there. I mean, you'll be
Unless
surprised.
You work for the CIA, don't document right, yeah, anything obviously. That you do.
But even like mundane tasks, like,
yes,
here's an example. Let's say I was working at a store or something like that, and something was really cool. Like you developed some sort of really cool organization system
mm-hmm.
at a store that made things more efficient. I would document that. I would write that down exactly what you did.
Okay. So just to talk about the mundane, do you know what's blowing up on TikTok like over the summer were the freaking clear bins in the fridge, in the pantry where you're organizing your food, right? I guarantee you those bins on Amazon are going for, like, those are hotcakes on Amazon right now. Those clear silicone plastic
bins. Jen just bought one. Maybe she watched TikToks.
Yes, because it's all over TikTok. It's all the organization. And you think, like, why would people care that I'm showing them the inside of my pantry, right? Why would people care? Like, this is how boring and mundane this can be. Like, it's not, you know, nothing is too boring or mundane, because if you're doing something that makes your life easier, it's going to make someone else's life easier. And as silly as it seems, people will be interested in that and then will probably either want to follow you, make a purchase from you, whatever it is. And I just think about those, like the silicone thing where people are literally putting like a go-go squeezes right in the fridge. It's like a video of that. And I'm like, this is so dumb. But yet, what do I see? My kids are literally like doing the same exact thing in my fridge. It's crazy, but it works.
You know what I fell for? And this is more me than you.
I'm dying to know. I want to know.
Well, someone took a photo of their computer setup at home. Just a photo of their desk and computer setup. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. I must know like what what you're using on your desk and whatnot.
Yeah.
And there were affiliate links.
Yeah.
So something stupid like that, you can make money.
Yeah. Well, another thing that people are doing, which I've done too, and it makes money, is, you know, Amazon is really pushing their Amazon wardrobe right now. They want you to buy clothes on Amazon, and they have this whole like free 7-day, like buy it and you can keep it for 7 days and then you can send it back. Most of the clothing brands are clearly brands you've never heard of, but they're like free shipping, free returns. It's all Prime, right? So I see this all the time, and I was like, I'm going to try it, see if it works. Buy clothes on Amazon, try them on, make a 15-second video or even just take a photo of it. And basically I do a poll. Should I keep it or return it, right? This is my latest dress from Amazon, romper, jumpsuit, whatever. People love it. They vote in the poll. They want it like people. But then I get DMs. Hey, what's the link to that? Hey, I want to buy that. I love it. Right. Like people are doing this all the time. And literally I'm literally just buying clothes on Amazon and returning them. And by the time I post it, like I've already made a decision. Right. Like I'm probably not going to let the public sway me on whether I'm keeping something or not. But I mean, right there, that's a business model.
I could like try out all the different latest versions of Crocs.
Yes, you could. And here are the rainbow Crocs. I have a pair of rainbow Crocs that I bought for one of my kids, and he's like, yeah, these are a little bright because they're like fluorescent color. And I was like, oh, I thought you liked that, but guess not. Guess I went too far. But I mean, I think that's the thing that I think people need to get over, is that people do not know how to do what you know how to do. People love convenience. People love being told what to do. And if you can do that for an audience, you can make money from it, and you can do it on the side.
I don't like being told what to do, just for the record, when we work together.
Right, but you're also not most people. But most people don't want to have to make a decision. They want the decision made for them.
Here's one thing that I want to end with. I think when it comes to freedom and making money online, the best thing that you can do is to hang out with other people who are already doing what you eventually want to do.
Oh, that's good.
Right? Because here's the mindset. Like when I was an engineer, everyone I hung out with was engineers, and no one was doing their own thing. So I would never even think about doing my own thing. That incidentally, this is why I was so lonely early on. When we first started Bumblebee Linens, no one else was selling online, like none of our friends. And they didn't think that anything that we were doing was going to be like a long-term thing that would bring in more than like a couple bucks here and there.
Yeah.
I mean, they were nice about it, but I could hear in their voice, right? I think things would have gotten a lot faster if I belonged to some sort of community of e-commerce people, because then I could have bounced ideas off of them. We could have talked about strategy, and I would have had a lot more confidence, to be honest with you. Right?
Well, that's the key, the word confidence. Yeah. Because first of all, what is it that when we do our one-on-one coaching calls with people, what is the number one problem people have?
Mindset.
It's always mindset. It's rarely effort or product.
Right.
Right. Very rarely do we come across something that's like, this is just crappy. I mean, it's happened every once in a while. But for the most part, it's people aren't confident in themselves and their own ability. And I think when I first got started blogging, my ex-husband made a good amount of money. Like, we didn't need money for me to, like, when I ramped it up, right? We weren't in a situation where it's like, we got to pay our bills, right?
Right.
And I had lots of well-meaning friends, nice people, say to me, well, I don't really understand why you would work if you don't have to, right? Because I had a lot of little kids. Like, it definitely was something that, like, changed our lifestyle as far as, like, time. And so when you're already struggling, as every single person struggles with confidence, everyone, I don't care what people tell you, everyone has doubts about what they're doing. When you already have that little seed of doubt, and then you have people who don't get you and don't get what you're doing, like when you were an engineer and they were like, oh, that's great that you have a side business. That's great.
Yep.
Right? And you hear that little tone, or, but why would you want to work if you don't have to? Like, there's that slight amount of, and I guarantee it's not coming from a negative place from these people. It's just they don't understand, right?
Right.
And then all that does is feed your doubt and deplete your confidence. And when you can sit in a room with a bunch of people that are doing something similar, and I remember sitting in a room with Tiffany Ivanovsky, who runs Emma Lou's Boutique, and she said, I hate to admit this, but I love to work. She's like, I can't admit that anywhere else. She's like, but I love to work. I get up every day and I'm excited to work 10 hours. But if I say that at my kid's school, I look like a bad mom, right? Because I'm somehow picking work over my kids, right? You know, which isn't true. She loves her kids, right? And she spends a ton of time with them. But I think when you surround yourself with people in your same space, then it's not like, oh, great, you're selling hankies. It's like, dude, your listings suck. Fix your website, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
You know, but you have people that are so supportive of you that they're even willing to be hard on you, right? And say, hey, I want to help you get to another level of success. I want to see you achieve even more. I'm going to be honest with you, but I'm also going to be like your biggest cheerleader and your biggest fan. So I think that's the really critical part of all of that, is surrounding yourself with people, because there's enough doubt on its own without, you know, not having anybody to support you.
I mean, we've talked about millionaires, we talked about financial freedom, we talked about different ways to make money. But if you take away anything from this episode, just go out there and join some sort of entrepreneurship group in what you want to do.
They have them in every town.
They have them in every town. You can find them online on Facebook as well, if you don't want to go anywhere. But just introduce yourself and just ingratiate yourself in that community. And I guarantee that you'll get inspired to do something. And as Tony mentioned, like, it's all about your mindset in the beginning. Like, if you believe that you can do it, you can do it. I mean, it's not rocket science. I was just thinking to myself the other day, like, compared to what I used to do at work, like, the business stuff, like, doesn't require as much brain power. And it's fun because it has a human aspect to it. Whereas, you know, everything I used to do at work was related that don't talk back. But all the human psychology stuff is a lot of fun. And once you kind of have a grasp of what works, not only will you make money, but it'll be like Tiffany says, she enjoys it. Well, I hope you enjoy that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.